a shot in the dark. Where he's sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, episode 236. Woo! All right, I am more awake this time. I'm not recording this at the butt crack of dawn. I apologize for being half asleep during the last episode. I haven't even listened to it. I refuse to listen to that episode. I'm sure I sound completely incoherent. But after just too much going on with consulting on Monday and then the tech tragedy that happened with my interview with Billy Kangas. So I've listened to some of the backup recording, and in Mark is, I don't know if he's done so already. I'll have to go and check during the break, but he is going to put that, my friend Mark is going to put that up on the Over the Counter podcast as, and so you can hear it in that form over there, and there's going to be a different form loaded up over here on this side, I think, if you're a friend of the show. And we've all dedicated to redoing the interview, or at least doing another one the next time I'm in Michigan. So after 2 days of reruns that I didn't plan on, I just had to get you guys a show. But it's like, so I don't even remember most of what I said during the last show. I'm so tired and it's so on the fly. So if I repeat myself today, you're just going to have to drink, because that's part of the drinking show. That's part of the drinking game of the show. If I tell the same story within 10 episodes, and I obviously don't know that I am. So I'm just going to, I'm going to hit a couple of those things again today while I'm actually coherent. But for the most part, the only thing I want to mention about that is, so I left out a really crazy detail. So we were doing a, so I was, if you're just listening, you didn't hear the last show, I consult to build coffee houses for people mostly in the Catholic world. I was in Flint, Michigan, over the weekend. My goodness, these glasses are filthy. Oh my gosh. I was in, Flint, Michigan over the weekend, and, I was touring this old rectory that we're going to turn into a coffee house. Here's me, the sound of me just futilely trying to clean my glasses like I used to with my breath. Here you go. No, that is going to do nothing but smear. If someone would please, a friend of mine, the father of the lovely and talented and shiny Antoinette Gulish, has convinced me that the reason these don't work is because they're cheap, and they are in fact cheap glasses. So maybe I've been bashing anti-glare, anti-scratch coating all along when it was just cheap anti-glare, anti-scratch coating. Anyway, so we were touring this rectory. See, I don't have to be exhausted to be ADD, but see, I can find my way back to my thread now. So we're touring this rectory, and we go downstairs, and there's a boiler room, and it's kind of like, well, I mean, this is the boiler room. I'm like, well, let me see it. You know, might be some storage we can use or something. And, you know, they open the door, I go in, and it smells super like gas. Like, hey, Father, it smells like gas in here. He goes in, oh my gosh, it does. So he gets on the phone, calls a maintenance guy, has him check something. He's like, yeah, so let's get out of here. So they called the gas company. What I didn't know, cause I left right after that, evacuated the building, sent people out. And sure enough, there was a bona fide, honest to goodness gas leak. And there were a bunch of candles burning upstairs in one of the rooms. So I came really close, evidently, to not remodeling a rectory, to be remodeling a crater next to a church. So, luckily the church is like all stone, so it probably would have survived just fine. And the rectory was built in the 60s, and it might be, you know, as long as there was insurance money, but, but I liked the rectory though. So yeah, so I'm glad we saved it, but we saved the rectory from a gas explosion, which was, kind of interesting. Anyway, so, that was the main thing I forgot to tell you about with the Flint, story over the weekend. And I want to reflect some more at some point about some of these aspects of like using some social entrepreneurship. I want to go through and pick, I might do a second show where I just pick out some themes, early church ecclesiology, using social entrepreneurship to help, people instead of just giving them handouts, place-based, outreach to college ministry, to college people and stuff like that. I want to talk about some of those things, but that's not what I'm going to do today. So I didn't watch the debate last night. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go home and watch the debate. Then I was like, no, I'm going to, my arthritis kind of kicked up a little bit in my foot. And so I was kind of in pain, and I had this, I guess from walking funny and just from being on planes for 3 weeks, seems like my back was just killing me yesterday. I had some spasm in my low back on the left side, and I just kept trying to stretch it and it wouldn't work. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to the gym. So, I went to the gym and, I didn't even pretend to work out. I took a shower, got in the hot tub, and just stretched in the hot tub for a really long time and took cold showers in between, kind of with the Wim Hof breathing. So I'm starting to get into the Wim Hof thing. If you haven't heard this, there's a guy named Wim Hof, Michael Miley, Justin Schneer drink. And several of my friends have started, getting into him. Guys like Tim Ferriss are into him. Laird Hamilton, the big wave surfer, is into him. And he has you do like these cold showers and cold water immersions with certain breathing techniques and stuff. And my friends all swear by it on a bunch of fronts. So I've been starting to do the cold shower thing with these certain kind of breathing techniques and stuff. And I tell you what, man, it'll wake you up. That'll really, when you get a ton of oxygen into you and you're controlling your breathing and moving the blood around, like while you're taking on a bunch of cold, that's some serious alertness. Like you only, you're only doing what you're doing. And when you get out, you're focused on whatever you're doing. But what I was doing last night is that, if you ever, like, you alternate hot and cold on something because it moves fresh blood into that place. So I was going from hot to cold to hot to cold, but the pool is only like 80 degrees. So I was like wanting a little colder than that. So, I just did that for a while and I was like, okay, I can still make it in time to hear most of the debate. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go get pho. There's a little pho place right by the gym, less than $10, giant bowl of rice noodles and beef broth and all kinds of yummy goodness. And I'm like, you know what? Let's do this. And so I just blew the whole thing off. I ended up going home, talking to Perry West, not even turning the TV on, telling him about my weekend, went to bed, went to sleep. Slept like the dead for 7.5 hours. Just like, literally dropped off the cliff. My software said I was like in deep, 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 deep sleep the entire time. Woke up at like 5:30. Like just boom. I dropped off the cliff. I can always tell when my body needs restoration, when my body's hurting, because they say really, really deep sleep is body restorative. And when you kind of stay up more in like your higher ranges or you're in more like your mental kind of like refunctioning, kind of repurposing, kind of cleaning out your RAM, so to speak. And, so when I'm like beat up physically, I can tell, cause I'll see my software, like I'll go to sleep and I will stay in this crazy deep sleep the entire time. And that's what happened. So I knew I decided just beating myself up with all this travel. But I feel better today. I feel a lot better today. So I may go back and watch some highlights from the debate. I think I might be strong enough to take it. Okay. Speaking of being beat up by the debate, I don't know if he got the idea from someone else or if this was a trend that was happening last night, but massive shout out to Father Michael O'Loughlin Frollo from Hopro Mogo. Father Michael O'Loughlin, pastor of Holy Protection of the Mother of God, Byzantine Catholic Church. There was a status update on Facebook last night and Frollo marked himself, says Michael Paul O'Loughlin marked himself safe during the third presidential debate. like he's in a hurricane or an earthquake or something. Oh, I really hope that was something that Facebook was offering last night. I want to give Mark Zuckerberg a high five if that's the case. Now if you would just quit being such a shill for the Democrat Party. So I didn't even watch the debate. I have no comments at all. It's funny. Trump is making all this claim about, voter fraud and all this. And I didn't see him say, I don't know if what he said about it last night, but one of my friends from back in Southern Missouri in a small town did a test, And he said, you know, who he goes, let's just have a test. Who's everyone voting for? Negative comments will be deleted. I want one word or one or two words. Just tell me who you're voting for. And I have to admit, he had like a maybe 100 people, you know, 50 to 100 people respond. And it was 98% Trump. So A, that frightens me. B, the reason why is that maybe there is voter fraud and poll fraud or whatever. And maybe there really is, maybe Trump really is going to win. B, maybe it's just that's in a small town. And it's, and what's interesting is that that area that he's from is a town that is a place that's been very, very, very union connected. And across, I mean, it was just like, I'd say, yeah, I think someone did the math on it, it was 98% Trump. And it is, there's something that the Democrat Party and the Republican Party are paying the price right now for not taking seriously all these struggling people in like rural white areas and just working class white people in that, and thinking that they've got them locked in their party or whatever. Someone is coming along, I think wrongly and lying, but in a bad guy, but speaking to them. So I think I was going to vote for Evan McCullen. I'm telling you, I think there's a chance to signal a message and send a message and open up the door for third parties in 2020. All right, when we get back, I'm going to try not to talk about politics. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. See you in a second.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. Okay, so speaking of media and projects and promoting, I want to talk about one thing that I'm going to lead into this article by Andrew Sullivan. A kid, he's probably like in his mid-20s or something, you know, this guy in the Catholic world, he's got him a project, like a blog or something like that, some kind of a thing, adds me. I'm not going to say his name on the air, shame the poor guy, but because I see this all the time, he just happens to catch the brunt of it. So this guy added me on Facebook. Now, I look and see him on Facebook, and he's got some mutual friends with me. Most of them are people inside the Catholic media world. But he's got, you know, pretty good friend contacts that are in common with me. And I see I kind of look at his page, see he's got a blog. I do a little research. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I'll be friends with the guy. You know, so I approve friendship. I get no contact from him whatsoever. A few minutes later, this guy sent you, I get a notice saying that he sent me an invitation to like the page of his project. And so I shot the kid a message and I'm like, hey, you know, this happens all the time, but I'm just going to tell you from an older guy to a younger guy that's been doing this a while, that's bad form. You added me. I don't know you. You added me as a friend on my personal Facebook page on Facebook because of who our mutual friends are. And you're like, you're a young man in the world that I inhabit. Maybe I can help in some way. I'm like, okay, great. I accept your friendship. And the very first interaction that I get from you, not hello, nice to meet you. Hey, I'm friends with so-and-so. I've listened to your show. I like what you're doing. Not even a hello, not a thanks for the ad. Not nothing, not just a thanks for the ad. Bye. Nothing. An invitation to like his project. And so I shot a message back to the kid and I was like, you know, hey, that's kind of bad form. You know, if the only reason you want to be friends with me is to promote your project, then that's use. And I'm just not interested. And so he shot an email. He shot me a message back. He's like, "Hey, I'm sorry about that. I never thought about it from that angle. I'm new at promoting this stuff." And I shot a message back and said, "Hey, you know what? We're Catholic. We should do this differently." And as I'm getting involved more and more with online media, and I got to start working the social media, I know I don't touch my Facebook page. I don't touch my Twitter feed. I don't do hardly anything other than just put this show out every day. I don't promote it. I don't do all kinds of stuff. And I should. But here's the thing, is that I want digital community to be real community. And I really, if it's not real community, then it's a distraction and I don't really need another distraction. And I've just never been real good at being like super promote-y and like just all day long trying to get myself out there for the sake of getting myself out there so there's enough me and the static that you'll notice who I am. And maybe that's why I'm broke most of my life, but I'd rather just sit back, do what I do, talk to who I meet, talk to who I connect with, and live like a normal human being that happens to be using ones and zeros to make screens look like something or make words come through earphones so you can hear it in your car or whatever, instead of using a sharp number two pencil or a pen. I look at all this, but the problem is that this way of writing, this way of speaking, this way of doing things has its own set of rules. And I'm starting to wonder whether those rules are not really contrary to what we're all about. And I'm not wanting to pull out. I'm not wanting to bail, but I'm definitely thinking that there's a movement. There's always a movement, a backlash to something. And this is a backlash that we should be leading. This is a movement we should be, in the sense of the Catholic Church, we Christians, we should have been the people that figured out how to use these tools and do this in a human way. So then when everyone else came to their senses and were looking for a way to get undistracted and to unplug from this giant static machine that we call the internet a little bit, that we would have had some kind of models for how that can happen. You know, should have been said, "Hey, let us show you how we do this. You can promote, you can get your name out there. You can get your content out there in a way that it's shared, in a way that people see it, but you can do that in a human way. You can stay abreast of the information. You can, without being in an echo chamber, but also without just drowning in the static. And here, let's show you how we do that." These are things that are kind of affect the spiritual life. They really fall under the rubric of human formation. And that's what we should be great at, is human formation, because we understand what the human person is and what the human person is for. We understand what is pushing the limits of the human person in a moment and what is kind of like long-term ergonomic to the flourishing of the human person, right? So I was on a plane coming back from Flint, and I fired up my little pocket where I, you know, getpocket.com or whatever, like a little pocket thing where you save articles to read. And Ann Breiling had mentioned this to me, and I'd already saved it, but Andrew Sullivan had written an article called "I Used to Be a Human Being." Now, I think I may do an entire show on this, because I bought a book or two that he recommended in here, and I'm going to read through a little bit, and I'd like to maybe just pick, I'm probably going to dive back. This is a trend I'm looking at. So this started with the conversation that Ann Breiling and I were having about Shrine Coffee and about whether or not it should have Wi-Fi. And I go back and forth between the idea of providing what people need, so they'll come and they'll dwell in your place. And one of the things they need, like, and expect, like hot and cold running water, is free Wi-Fi now. And I've had Wi-Fi in every one of my shops. But I've noticed in the last 5 years or so, just people, we've gotten to the point where it's like we can't, we're addicted. We're addicted to always being on. You know, there's a time when something that can be otherwise good in certain contexts just can't be around because it can't be used in moderation. You know, there's like a, let's not even talk about someone who's a full on alcoholic. Like they just can't drink at all. But there's been times in my life where I was just drinking a little too much. I was using that as a crutch to get through. Not like I was just getting myself hammered every night, but I was definitely using that chemical hit to dial down more often than should be. And, I had to look at it and I had to kind of like make an adjustment. A good practice that I've developed is every Advent and every Lent, I give up alcohol, and, it kind of sets things back to center again. And, last Advent, I didn't make it. And when Lent came around, I got serious about it. And I did a paleo autoimmune, kind of reset, 30 day reset. And I was like one cup of coffee a day. I didn't drink for 30 days. It was like, I did a really big kind of chemical reset, so to speak, during Lent. And I think I'm going to do that during Advent again this year. There's sometimes that you just can't have now. So one thing that I have to correct sometimes is that I just have to go, you know what? Me and drinking by myself probably just isn't a good idea right now. I'm too stressed out. There's too much going on, and I can go out and have a couple glasses of wine socially with some friends. I can even sit down with a bottle of scotch and have a conversation with a friend and have a few glasses of scotch. But right now, coming home and sitting by myself watching TV and refilling my wine glass probably just isn't the best idea. You know, there's times I get there, right? There's certain places where it's too easy for that to become dysfunctional, right? Now, why do I talk about that? Or a good example of like, you'll hear people in Sexaholics Anonymous say that we can no longer you can't lust like a gentleman anymore. Now, there's a question whether you could ever lust like a gentleman, but they say that lust has just become toxic for them. So it's like alcohol to an alcoholic. They can't have even the smallest little sip or they could send them over the edge, right? So that's more like an alcoholic that can't have it all. And there's a bunch of problems with that analogy because you should never have lust at all. But I don't think I'm starting to get to the point where it's like hot and cold internet is something that in certain places and certain situations, it's not possible to have it and still be social. I don't think you can have I'm starting to think you can't have your phone on during a dinner party and still be present. You know, I just, and I'm going to get into this article after I get back from the break, but I was on a train coming back from the airport, and in my section of the train, just from the seat up to where the doors are back, there was about 12 people and 10 of them had their phone in their hand, staring at their phone. And I get it. They're back from travel. They're making arrangements, but there was people on the phone talking and all that stuff. Several of them had headsets on. And I can remember a time when you would take public transit and you would actually have a conversation. But all right, let's go to the break and I'll pick this up on the other side. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. So talking about distraction and internet and how we need to learn how to do this. And I think that one of the things that we can do in the Catholic world is learn how to use these advancements and goods in a way that is ergonomic to the human person, that is a way that is commensurate with community and society and the common good, in a way that keeps us still human. And we can model that for other people in a way, and maybe even create tools to let that happen. So yes, I had these experiences. So I was saying in the last segment that this conversation started with me and Ann Breiling about whether or not to have Wi-Fi in a coffee house we're building there. Both of us love the idea of not having. So there's a place up in, I think it's Vancouver, called the Faraday Cafe, where they actually put an entire coffee house in a Faraday cage. So don't bring your phone or your computer, because it won't work. I mean, you can use your computer as a fancy reader / word processor, but you can't do anything with it. You can't talk to anybody. You can't get internet. Your phone will not work in this cafe. They purposely did this and they advertise it. So, I mean, the cafe itself has Wi-Fi, I'm sure, or has an internal hardwired internet network to like do orders and stuff on, but it's not available to the public and the baristas aren't on it. So, and so I know I'm just being kind of Luddite here, and I'm being like, back in the day, we walked uphill both ways. But no, I mean, I remember there's this community forum called the Coffee House. And I can remember, like, let's say 1994, 95, I can remember being a daily regular for hours on end at Lakota Coffee Company before really, I mean, occasionally you see someone with a laptop, but for the most part, no. And it was an academic cafe. It was right near University of Missouri. There's a lot of people studying. People were distracted by their books and reading and stuff, but there was something way more human about it. And so I remember what it was like. And so, you know, I remember I've talked about this before. Cafe Grumpy in New York pulled their internet connection and their business went down. And then it kind of came back to normal. And I've been there since then, and the place was popping and there was a line. And this old guy that they interviewed said, you know, yeah, it was kind of empty in here for a few days. And then people started trickling back in. And then I started seeing something I haven't seen in a while in a cafe. People started talking to each other again. And I think I have been a great defender. If you go listen to it, go scroll through the over-the-counter podcast, Conversations with me and Mark Giesecheck. And you can find several of them about digital community. It's a running theme. And I'm a great defender of digital community being real community. I stay connected with people that I care about and love. And if they live down the street, I would be having dinner with them. But I'm in Colorado and they are in California. And I want to see pictures of my goddaughter without someone having to print them out and mail them to me. I want to see what my favorite professor thought about this news article. I mean, I love being connected to my people in this new way. But when being connected to the people that you wish you had near gets to the point where it keeps you from being connected to the people around you, then you're getting into something that's a little toxic, right? And you kind of have to, I'm starting to wonder if we need to force the issue by banning phones in certain places or cutting the Wi-Fi cord in cafes. So, you know, then they, maybe people will be like the old Crosby, Stills, and Nash song. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. It's like, well, if you can't connect with that person you wish you were near through this digital media, then tell what you were going to tell them about your life to the person that you're having a cup of coffee next to or something, you know, heaven forbid you might make a friend that you want to have over for dinner, you know? So it kind of came to a head when I was on my last consulting trip to California, and Ann and I went up to Red Rocks Cafe or Red Rocks Coffee in Mountain View. Now, get it, Mountain View is the hometown of Google and all this stuff, and it's like it's a very techie community. But this is a nonprofit coffee house owned by a church. They're trying to create community. And we saw some people outside actually talking, hanging out, you know, at tables and having conversations. But we got inside and there's this long banquette. And there was all these people sitting on this banquette facing empty chairs, front of laptops, headphones in, and they were lined up like drones, just like they were plugged into the Matrix, man. No one even looking up at us when we walked by. Half the seating into place off limits because you'd be interrupting their personal space to sit there. And they've all just taken up that banquette, made all those chairs facing unsittable, and they're just all plugged in and staring at a screen. And I took a picture of it. And I was like, man, I mean, it looks like something out of a dystopian novel where they're just all plugged into their units or something. Freaked me out. So this has been kind of a conversation in my, you know, among my friends, and it's a running theme in my mind. So I was coming back from my last trip on the airplane, and once again, the woman next to me, from the moment I got on to the moment I left, she had her headphones in, looking at her phone. And so I didn't feel like getting up and digging. I didn't have enough. The only two books I had with me were both, one was a Jazani book and one was the Spiritual Exercises from Communion and Liberation this year. And I just didn't have the bandwidth to read either of them. So I pulled my phone and I opened up my pocket app to look at some articles that I'd saved. But I'm just kind of using my phone as a book at this point, right? I'm just reading something because the magazine in front of me was boring, right? Actually, it's the magazine that I'd read cover to cover already, because it's the magazine for United Airlines. And I've been on 6 airplanes in 3 weeks, and I've read that article about Spain, and I read the article about the mountain men, and I'd pretty much read that magazine. So I remember Ann had introduced this article to me, had mentioned it by Andrew Sullivan. Now, Andrew Sullivan's an interesting cat. I mean, he's an internet commentator, kind of activist guy. He's just like super feverishly involved in, he used to be just like, you know, tweeting like 100 times a day, updating his blog every 30 minutes sometimes. But he's a really interesting guy. He's a commentator. He comments on a lot of public stuff, but he goes over into the realm of philosophy and religion and stuff, and he's a pretty sane, insightful guy. Now, he's a gay man, and he's married to a man, and he's been in the conversation about this, and I found some of what he said fairly sane, and he likes and quotes things that I think are completely nuts. But he also turns right around and finds insights into the stuff that I read that I didn't see. And so he writes this article. I think he's an example that someone can buy into some worldviews that I think are wrong. And as best I could tell, he seems like he's a fallen away Catholic or a fallen away Anglo-Catholic. I can't tell. He's from England originally, looks like. And he's a pretty interesting guy, but he just talks about being at this meditation hall and having to put his iPhone into a basket and give it up for the retreat, and how he felt like he was like slashing his wrist or something. And now the first thing I want to comment on is that he says it's in a converted novitiate in central Massachusetts. So these are Buddhists doing this, and the place they're doing it is used to be a monastery, evidently, because we're not doing this. That says something in itself. Why don't we have a retreat about mindfulness where we take people's iPhones away? We should probably do that. But he goes on about his addiction and about how he got into it and how bad he got at one point and how, but what was really interesting is he goes into coming out of it, and how he's going for a walk and he's noticing the change in light through the leaves for the first time. And he's like, I heard birdsong for the first time in years. And of course he'd heard it, but he'd never listened to it. And I think he goes on and on about these different things and boredom and stuff. And finally, when he starts getting out, and when he finally gets a little unnumb from all this, and then he makes a point before I go into that. He makes a point that think about, he says, just look around you at the people crouched over their phones as they walk the streets or drive their cars or walk their dogs or play with their children. Observe yourself in the line for coffee or in a quick word break or driving or even just going to the bathroom. Visit an airport and see the sea of craned necks and dead eyes. We have gone from looking up and around to constantly looking down. If an alien had visited America just 5 years ago and then returned today, wouldn't this be its immediate observation that this species has developed an extraordinary new habit, and everywhere you look lives constantly in its thrall? Think about that. Before the rise of smartphones, even just a few years ago, we were not all just looking down all the time. I mean, we're literally going to develop, if we keep doing this, we're going to like develop different shape to our necks or something over time. It's like we're all looking down. We're no longer erect. We're no longer looking at each other. I've noticed myself, it's harder and harder and harder to get someone to make and not break eye contact with you. Anyway, so this article he goes to and he talks about, I just want to talk about one brief aspect of it when we get back from the break. And then I want to move on to an amazing discovery that got announced yesterday that I think is just epic and frightening at the same time. So you're listening to The Counterposition. I'm your host, Andrew Whaley. We'll be right back.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. So I'm just talking about a couple little aspects of an Andrew Sullivan article called I Used to Be a Human Being. I'm going to put the link in the show notes. For some of you that are listening to me over in Catholic land, sometimes I post articles. There may be some language in there. At one point, he says something about, you know, missing out on the good stuff on the internet, and he even mentions porn being enthralling or whatever. It's like, I post stuff from people that are not coming from the same worldview as us that I find are interesting. Okay. And comment on it a little bit. And I think you guys are all grown ups and I can put these things out there. So occasionally you're going to read something I put up and it's going to say something, or maybe the whole tone of their article might be something we firmly disagree with, but I think there's a reason to pay attention to it. You may see words that I don't use on the air in some of the articles I post. Get over it. I mean, be a grown up. We live in the world. We need to know what's going on. We need to interact with people that are like us. And the same way that when we go to Papua New Guinea, they, you know, use threatening gestures because they're headhunters or whatever. It's like people are going to use bad language. The dirty little secret is Catholics use bad language too. I've heard me do it. So back to Andrew Sullivan. He has this moment where he talks about how he grew up and how he says, I absorbed a lot of her agony, talking about his mom who was bipolar, you know, and hearing her screams of frustration and misery and constant terrifying fights with my father and never knowing how to stop it or how to help. And then he goes on, he says, I knew the scar tissue from this formative trauma was still in my soul. I had spent 2 decades in therapy, untangling and exploring it, learning how it had made intimacy with others so frightening, how it made my own spasms of adolescent depression even more acute, how living with the kind of pain from the most powerful source of love in my life had made me the profoundly broken vessel I am. And then he talks about how he has this moment that as he started removing all these distractions, that he got in touch with this thing that was under the surface there all along. And he says, I was suddenly, he says, but I had never felt it so vividly since the very years it had first engulfed and defined me. It was as if, having slowly and progressively removed every distraction from my life, I was suddenly faced with what I had been distracting myself from. Resting for a moment against the trunk of a tree, I stopped, and I suddenly found myself bent over, convulsed with the newly present pain, sobbing. So, here's the thing. I think that we throw around words like addiction when we talk about the internet, when we talk about porn, when we talk about these different things that are not actually substances. And some people cry foul of using the word addiction in that context. But if you've ever been around 12-step programs, and I've been in a few of them, my old man was a drinker when I was growing up, and he's still a drinker. And I did the Alateen thing and stuff. I've been involved with developing men's groups and stuff and dealing with that kind of thing. I've studied 12-step programs. I've checked out SA. I've checked out different programs and how they do things. And one thing you notice when you spend some time around 12-step programs is that only the new guys, it's very rarely that it's the newer guys that are talking about, oh, I saw a big sweaty beer sitting on a counter that I walked by in a restaurant and I wanted to reach out and grab it and pound it with all my heart. I mean, that part is over for most of them. You just go read the 12 steps. Most of the steps are dealing with all the crap that you've been covering up with your addiction. I think that all this stuff, regardless of what's on the screen, just the screen per se, I catch myself just constantly looking at my phone. It's like if I get a little uncomfortable, I get a little bored, I get a little, stressed or something, I reach for the phone. I don't even know what I'm looking at. It's not like I want to see if someone responded to my text or I wonder if someone commented on that thread. I'm just reaching for the phone, right? And I know I've got deep, deep scars within me. I just had, not too long ago, a long conversation with a friendship that I have developing right now. And I was telling her about, stuff that happened to me when I was a kid and stuff. And she was just like, dude, have you talked to anybody about this? And I'm like, and I've been planning on like kind of maybe starting to do some counseling with this Catholic counseling service in town or whatever. But, I had some crap happen to me growing up that I know for a fact it rears its head. There are scars there. Right under the surface. But if you constantly cover those up with work, being a workaholic or just being addicted to all these things, different forms of digital addiction, or heaven forbid you're caught up in the opioid addiction epidemic that's sweeping our country right now, or you're drinking too hard, or you're just replacing settling in and acknowledging that and facing it with something else to keep you distracted, then you're never going to get there. And so I don't care what Andrew Sullivan believes. I don't care that he's gay. I don't care that he runs in both atheist and Christian circles. I don't care if he uses bad words on occasion. I think this is one of the most mindful articles about where we are at right now. And this is one volley in the conversation. And so I'm going to put it up and I want you to have a look at it. And I think I'm going to do I ordered the Recovering Conversation book that he recommends in here. And I'm thinking about, this has got me thinking about internet connections and cafes and whether they need to happen and whether or not we need to start a backlash against the phone movement. And we'll find a way for you to listen to the counterposition. So, I'm all for phones. I got one in my hand, but we need to do something else. All right, moving on. One last thing I want to talk about today. So, there is a story that came out yesterday. It's on iangadget.com. I'll put a link up. It's on if you Google it, it's on a bunch of sites right now. So science happens surprisingly sometimes. Sometimes you accidentally discover something that you weren't trying to find. Now, this has been billed as that, like penicillin or radioactivity or microwave ovens or something, but that isn't exactly what this is. There was a Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Tennessee announced that they have made this massive discovery. I mean, this may go down in history as one of the great discoveries that saved the planet and mankind. I mean, this is amazing. And they weren't exactly, they were trying to figure out how to do this, but they thought it was going to be a big, long, multi-step project. And they got shocked by the fact that the easiest step, that was the first one, did it and did it perfectly, and that's all it was needed. And what they figured out how to do is to turn carbon dioxide directly back into ethanol. So when you burn an alcohol, like in an internal combustion engine, or if you just breathe in oxygen as an animal and breathe back out, you put carbon dioxide into the air. And so that's this carbon emission, zero carbon, your carbon footprint and all that. They're mostly talking about carbon dioxide. So this is basically the waste from the internal combustion process. And so you can be doing that through the internal combustion kind of thing that is us, by turning things into energy and taking in oxygen air and using the oxygen and expelling what's left. Or you can put it in, turn it into gasoline and burn it in your car, and it's going to put out carbon into the air, right? So what they've figured out how to do is to take the waste from our combustion process and turn it back into the fuel that we can do the combustion process with. So basically, they figured out how, with very little electricity, at room temperature, in a stable reaction, to turn what comes out of the back of your car back into what you put into your car. Now, they're on the very, very front end of this. But 10, 15, 20 years from now, I mean, if you add a little bit of solar into this, into the mix, you could basically have, if you add a solar panel to the top of the car, or by then the windows, they're working on this now, the windows will probably be solar panels. That's enough electricity to keep the radio going and to keep the computers running and to keep the, and to keep this process, this electrical charge in this process, who knows, man, maybe you'll be able to have a fully enclosed system and you're driving around a perpetual motion machine. I mean, that's a little, but the point being is that this is something that they can capture carbon, maybe carbon that's in the air, and put it, never let it into the air, get it back into ethanol form and then reuse it again. This could be the crazy energy source that we've been looking for. This could be, I mean, this is amazing. I mean, it's like, it sounds weird, but I mean, when you drink a glass of water, you go pee, you flush it down the toilet, it goes through the process, it goes out in the ocean or whatever, then it evaporates and it goes back up, turns into a cloud, falls on rain on top of the mountain or snow, and then turns into a lake and then comes back down. It's like water is recyclable, right? It's like, we're kind of figuring out how to do that with carbon at this point. Absolutely fascinating times to live in. But now we're all going to have plenty of juice for our cell phones to keep us all distracted and addicted even more. All right. I'm out. Let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition. See you on the other side.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.